I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Happy Friday.
Friday.
There we go.
Friday.
I just feel like I have to start it out that way. Happy Friday.
Wasn't it the Mamas and the Papas had that wonderful song, Monday, Monday? I know what that look means. We should do Friday, Friday.
No. So here we are on Friday.
Moving right along.
Moving right along. I'm just going to not
just ignore that.
Like that didn't even happen.
Thank you. I'm going to ignore something that you say later in the program.
The Mamas and the Papas. So Richard, when I was thinking about the topic for the podcast this week, as I was preparing for it throughout the week.
Discuss these things each day.
Yeah.
We talk about a little bit.
Yeah. I have our little note cards.
Right.
One of the things that came up earlier this week was we had a soccer game last week. My son's team had a soccer.
When you say we, see, the trouble is your son plays soccer. You follow the Premier League in England, mm-hmm. and you have season tickets to the Orlando...
City. Dude.
So when you say we, I'm not sure which one you're talking about because you identify with each of the three.
Right.
Well. So are we talking about Connor?
Well, actually, all three of us had a game last week. But Connor had a match last week. Okay. And our boys, we struggled, didn't do as well as we wanted to. And... So I send out an email each week that kind of outlines things and says, you know, okay, this is what happened. This is what we need to improve on. Let's go. And the guy that I coach with, he sends out an email. And my email, he made a comment to me where he said, Bernie, you can make everything have a positive spin. Mm-hmm. You can take anything and give it a positive spin. And so I was thinking... The topic for this week is optimism and pessimism.
Okay.
Because I think that one of the sources of positivity, one of the sources of being able to you know, turn lemons into lemonade, to use an old saying, is optimism. It is the idea that, you know what, things will be good. Things will work out. Things will be okay. And there are lots of people who think that way. I think that I'm one of those kinds of people. I tend to be a more optimistic person. But then there are those who struggle with that, and they tend to be more pessimistic, and they tend to look at the more negative side of things, or they have not necessarily lower expectations, but they don't feel as confident that something positive may happen or that a particular outcome will come to fruition. So I thought that would be a great topic for today.
Because I love this topic.
It's very mm-hmm. timely.
Right. Yes.
You know, we talked last week about working to overcome and persistence and those kind of things. We talked about the Leicester City.
I was going to say, who could be more optimistic than the folks at Leicester City?
And they won the Premier League. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say that they won because my team, Chelsea, did their job on Monday and did not allow the Tottenham Hotspurs to get all the points they needed, which I'm feeling very good about. That goal by Eden Hazard was just... magnificent. But
if that sounded like a foreign language to any of you, it is. But we'll keep going.
So optimism. Looking at the bright side. There's lots of ways that we kind of talk about optimism. The glass is half full, you know, looking on the bright side, high expectations, you know, high motivation. We kind of associate a lot of these things with optimism. And then, of course, the other side of it is when we look at things as the glass is half full or half empty, you know, we're less confident that positivity and positive things are going to happen. Mm-hmm. And that kind of pulls us onto the pessimistic side.
Yeah.
And, you know, while I think that the life needs a balance of both, you know, certainly there are times when you want to be very optimistic. You certainly don't want to be so optimistic that you fail to attend to details that you need to attend to. But too much pessimism really can be a problem. And, you know, we talk often about one of our colleagues. Well, I'll call him a colleague only because he's a psychologist and he studies children. But Martin Seligman, who talked about this idea of learned helplessness. Mm-hmm. And he did a lot of research on optimism. And what he found is that there are people, children, mm-hmm. who, because of various life circumstances, because of various life issues, they gained this perspective of the world that he referred to as learned helplessness, where they just expect to suffer, expect to fail, expect to do poorly.
Right. And you can imagine a child being raised in an environment that they have no control over. They're never allowed to make a decision. They never develop the skills to make their lives better.
Right.
Either because it's imposed upon them by dysfunctional, inappropriate parents, you know, who are abusive or authoritarian. But they never are given the opportunity to realize, to appreciate, to believe mm-hmm. that they can control anything, that they have any control over their environment whatsoever.
You know? Right.
And so that's called, in educational psychology, it's called an entity view of life, where, you know, these are fixed entities.
Right.
They're you can't change them. Okay.
Right.
Instead of an incremental view, kids develop an entity view. You know, well, I'm not smart, so I can't be a good student.
Right.
But that's what children develop over time. Is a IQ is a fixed trait, and I can't do anything about it.
Right.
Unless you give children the opportunity to exercise control,
right.
they never develop the skills to do that in childhood and later in life.
Right.
Right. Now, we've talked about allowing kids to make mistakes.
Right.
You know, you have to give them enough opportunity to learn how to gain control of their lives, and they're going to fall short, and they're going to make some mistakes. But you want them to make those mistakes while they're with you.
Right. Absolutely. And so when it comes to our kids mm-hmm. and working to help guide them in either a pessimistic or optimistic
right.
direction. You know, those are based upon many times. Those are based in part on our actions.
Right.
Now certainly temperament and those kinds of things set a foundation.
Right.
You know, children who have very difficult temperaments.
Right.
You know, they tend to be somewhat less optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be more. They tend to have sort of more of a negative worldview.
Right.
But that's part of their underlying temperament, their underlying sort of the lens through which they mm-hmm. see the world mm-hmm. is somewhat askew to that
right.
to that temperament.
Right. Well, you mentioned, and that's a very important point, though. You talk about temperament, okay?
Right.
Because when we talk about optimism and pessimism, I think that it's important that to remember that most of us have a choice.
Right.
Okay. Not all of us.
Right.
I mean, there are people who have a chemical imbalance
right.
and they do have clinical depression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to be optimistic when you're struggling against those biological forces. Okay.
Right.
And we acknowledge that.
Right.
Okay. And we acknowledge that there are other people who are overly optimistic.
Right.
Okay. We all have people in our lives who are, oh, I'm great. Every day's great.
Right.
Well, either they're not looking at the same world that we're looking at,
mm-hmm.
or they're deluding themselves in
right.
some way, and they're not acknowledging. You know, it makes your heart hurt when people come in and you'll get one partner in a marriage saying, "No, everything's fabulous, I'm great," and the other partner's dying of loneliness. You
right.
know? And you think, well, yeah, you're great, but in the meantime, your partner's dying of loneliness over here.
Okay? Absolutely.
And so, to be overly pessimistic because you have some sort of underlying chemical imbalance that's moving you in that direction, we acknowledge that. On the other hand, if you're overly optimistic, that's as big a problem as being pessimistic, being depressed.
Right.
Okay? Because you too many times, people who are overly optimistic are so at somebody else's expense. You know, your kids and your wife are miserable, but
right.
you're real happy. Okay. So what we're talking about, everybody else who does have a choice, okay,
right.
of being optimistic or pessimistic,
right?
Right?
Okay. Yeah. So thinking about that, though, you know, I just throwing a strategy out there for people who may be struggling with some of those kinds of things. You know, one of the things I do for people who have those episodic depressive situations,
which we all have.
We all have
right.
those.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, we go through these periods that last a couple of weeks or so where we're just down and, you know, the Eeyore gray cloud is over
right.
our heads and, you know, we think, oh my gosh, it's never going to get any better. This is awful. One of the things I have some of my patients do and encourage people to do in general is when the next time you're feeling up, you know, if you're feeling up today, but you know that there's this possibility of a depressive episode at some point in the future, I encourage people to write a note to themselves. Right. You know, while you're feeling good, while you're feeling up right now, write a note to yourself, right, to your depressed self, and say, hey man, it's gonna be okay. As I'm sitting here right now, I'm feeling good, I'm feeling optimistic, I'm feeling hopeful. You know, we've had depressive episodes in the past, we made it through, but here we are feeling good and feeling okay. You can get through it, you can be okay.
Right.
And just file that letter away, mm-hmm, you know, so that you see it every once in a while, and that so that you're sort of guaranteed to come across it the next time you're depressed. And it's just that little reminder, right, that, you know, hold on to hope, hold on to some of that optimism, right, that things are going to get a little bit better.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because we do wax and wane. You know, right, these things come and go.
Yeah.
The neurochemistry, when we say you have a chemical imbalance, well, the chemicals in our brain come from the foods we eat.
Right.
And because most of us don't eat exactly the same foods or metabolize, you might eat the same diet every day, but you metabolize it differently,
right,
from day to day. You have a different amount of neurotransmitters in, right, your brain from day to day. That's one explanation. We have circadian rhythms. We have weekly rhythms. There's a theory out now that, you know, you might have two good weeks and then a bad week. So, mm-hmm, don't try to write. Don't try to be creative in your bad week. Be creative,
right,
in your good. So we know that there's a dynamism. There's a movement to this, mm-hmm, that it's ups and downs, ebbs and flows.
Okay? Right.
And don't let the low spots throw you too much, because you're absolutely right. Eventually, they're going to pass.
Right.
Okay. No matter how much it hurts,
right,
you know, eventually you're going to feel better.
Right.
And you just have to kind of ride out the storm. It's like a hurricane. Or
right.
You just have to sort of ride it out. We know it's difficult. If it's a little problem, it might take a few hours to get over. If it's a big problem, it may take a few days to get over. If it's a death in the family or a divorce, it might take months or years to get over.
Right.
But eventually, your body and brain are going to right themselves, and you're going to be back to optimism again.
Right.
Okay. There'll be feelings. So please, when you write those notes to yourself, assure yourself that this is going to pass.
Yeah. Yeah. It will pass. It has passed already. It has passed, mm-hmm, before. You know,
right,
you've been,
that's
through,
right,
these before, mm-hmm, and so you're going to make it through. It's going to be okay.
Right.
Because we get hung up during those times that, mm-hmm, oh, well, this is just the way it is. This is the time.
No, no. Or we panic and we say, right, oh, my God, what's it? The sky's... No, the sky's not going to fall. Just ride it out. Don't be in a hurry. Let your body and brain right themselves. They'll get back there eventually, but just work through it gradually. You'll come back.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, that's a strategy that's primarily for adults. That's not a strategy that most kids are going to be able to use.
Children younger than their teen years probably,
yeah,
won't.
Some teenagers will be able to use it, but some will still struggle,
right,
with that. And so, you know, as adults, there are things that we can do like that process, and you know, there's lots of strategies that we can use to improve optimism and to improve that negative worldview. But when it comes to our kids, a lot of that is really how we model optimism and pessimism, how we encourage them, how we talk to them, and sort of the way that we set up their world is either going to encourage optimism or encourage pessimism.
Right.
You know, when if you tell your kid, you know, they ask for something, hey, do you think that I'll be able to pass this test? And I'm hoping that no parent ever says this, but if the parent says, you know, I don't know, that's a pretty tough test.
It's a tough course, a tough class. I don't know whether you can do it or not.
You know, you're planting the seed of pessimism. You're planting the seed of self-doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to not do that.
Right.
We need to avoid. You know what? If my kid asked me that and I'm not sure that he'll pass, you know, you certainly don't want to delude your child and say, oh, you know, you can do anything, because your kid knows that's not true.
Right.
But if you know that your kid's going to have a hard time with something and they say, Dad, do you think I can pass that test? You say, you know what, buddy, as long as you go in and do your best, I don't care if you pass or fail. Right. I just want you to go in and do the best you can do. And that's all that I ever will ask of you.
And kids need to hear, because sometimes you're going to fail.
Right.
And sometimes you're going to succeed.
Right.
Either is okay. It depends what you do.
Right.
About it.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not whether you pass or fail. It's what you do about it.
Right.
And it raises that, I think in one of our earlier podcasts, we talked about expectancy times value.
Yeah.
You know, do you value it?
Yeah.
You know, will you do something? It was a motivation podcast that we did. Do you value it? But the other thing is, do you expect to succeed?
Right.
You know, if you do this, do you expect to succeed?
Right.
That's what we want to build in our children.
Right.
I expect to be successful. Right. And this is really important to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. If we got down to the mathematics of it.
Yeah, right. There
is absolutely a formula for optimism.
Right.
You know, when you take the amount of effort perceived that you have to put into whatever it is that you're going to do, mm-hmm. and the likelihood of success, you put those two things together, that's going to fuel or mm-hmm. equate to how much optimism you can bring to a task.
That's right.
And so a lot of times, optimism, and I don't think a lot of people think about this, but a lot of times optimism and self-esteem go hand in hand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, if you feel good about yourself, if you feel confident about yourself, mm-hmm. if you value yourself,
right.
you're going to tend to be more on the optimistic side of the scale.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Conversely, if you doubt yourself, if you don't think that you're very good, if you don't value yourself very much, you're going to be far less confident and far more pessimistic about the likelihood of success or how things are going to work out or right. whether they're going to work out in your favor or not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of this begins with self-esteem.
And all this rests, it really rests on your achievement level.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can be optimistic when things are going well. It's easier to be optimistic.
Right.
Okay. So the obligation, whether you're an adult working on your own, or whether you're raising children and you're trying to make them optimistic, what you have to remember is it all is based on achievement. If you have failure after failure after failure, it's pretty hard to be optimistic.
Right. Okay?
But if you start to achieve and you start to get some success, you talked about that with the diet one time.
Right.
That once you start to see results, then you're motivated.
Yeah.
Okay, then you're motivated to do more. And that's where you want to get. You want to get to these places. So
right.
if you're stuck in a cycle of failure, for example, you and I both see many college students who are really struggling or they're failing and they're really getting down about the whole college experience. Okay. Well, if you're in college, if you're a typical 20-year-old, 18-year-old, and you're in college and the courses aren't fun, the experience, you're not enjoying the experience, it's, you know, one failure after another, it's not you, you've chosen the wrong path.
Right.
And we talked about that a week or so ago, is you got to change the path. You know, there's nothing wrong with you.
Right.
But this, you're not suited to this life, okay?
Right.
Maybe you should do something else, try something else where success is more likely to occur. Because none of us is built to withstand repeated failure.
Right.
I mean, that's obvious. But you know, if you're in a place where you're just truly unhappy day after day after day, and it's failure after failure after failure, then perhaps you need to change the path.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And again, for kids, that begins with the parent. You know,
that's
the parent mm-hmm. has an obligation.
Right.
There to help the kid with that. I was talking to a boy yesterday who plays baseball, and he wants to be a pitcher.
Right.
And his coach won't let him. And I said, well, why won't he let you pitch? He goes, well, he's never let me pitch. I said, well, you know, and we're going through all this, and I'm thinking, man, there's just something here that doesn't make sense. I said, well, have you ever practiced pitching? Mm-hmm. Have you ever pitched in practice? I think I first asked him. And he goes, no, he won't let me. I said, well, have you ever practiced pitching at all? No, I've never practiced to pitch. And I said, well, why don't you practice some first? He goes, well, I just want to do it in a game. And I think, okay, this is a great learning opportunity for dad, you know, situation for dad mm-hmm. to sit down and say, this is how we do it. Because I can imagine, you know, his dad, who's one of the coaches, will keep saying, no, buddy, I'm not going to put you into pitch. And the kid's thinking, oh, dad doesn't think I'm good enough. Dad doesn't think this. Dad doesn't think that. But maybe what Dad's really saying is, we really need to practice before you go on the mound.
Right.
And you know, it's a great opportunity to teach him
right.
how to look at his skills, how to anticipate success, and how to increase the likelihood
right.
of success in something new that you're going to try.
That's right.
And
it's the achievement issue. In
right.
other words, you have to get good at it. Let's get good at it,
right.
and then we can do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, for kids, mm-hmm. kids don't intuitively do that, I don't think.
No.
Not when it comes to a lot of these
They don't understand things. That whole practice phenomenon.
Right.
That's why we have coaches, because
right.
the coach shows you the way to get better at what you're doing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because there's this fascinating combination, and I think that we've talked about it before, but there's this fascinating combination of skilled training
right.
and unskilled practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. you have a situation where you need to be taught the fundamentals.
Right.
But you also need to be able to play in unstructured ways, because that's what pushes you to try things that you've never tried before. Mm-hmm. You know, we played a lot of, I know I'm a soccer guy now, but we played a lot of baseball when I was
right.
growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a cousin who his dad never really taught him how to throw a baseball,
mm-hmm.
Not in the way the typical way that you throw a baseball, you know, the way that you get your elbow back and all that. And because his dad never taught him that, he always had this, what they call in baseball, the short arm.
Right.
His hand is up by his elbow or up by his shoulder, and he kind of pushes the ball. Now, he throws the ball hard.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be a great shot putter.
Right.
I'm sure, because of the way that he throws.
Mm-hmm.
But he never learned to throw that way. He was able to throw hard and play baseball because we had this free unstructured, but he would never be able to be a pitcher.
He couldn't go to the next level.
He couldn't go to the next level because he didn't have the foundation.
Technical skills.
Right. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you have kids with these great technical skills, but every practice, every time, every opportunity they have to play mm-hmm. is very structured under very organized settings.
Right.
And so they never have the opportunity to push their limits
right.
and try things mm-hmm. that they've never tried before.
Right.
We see that a lot in soccer.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we do with our team is a lot of just scrimmaging
mm-hmm.
and just free time with the ball. Just do something with the ball. Just
right.
be creative
mm-hmm.
and do something that you've never tried before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we reinforce that
mm-hmm.
because you're learning something new. You're pushing
right.
your boundaries to try something new.
Yeah, because when you play organized sports, if you're the catcher,
right.
you're the catcher. Probably
right.
nobody else is going to catch. Maybe there's one or two.
Right.
But if you're playing just pickup games, anybody can be the catcher.
Right.
Anybody can be the pitcher.
Exactly.
Okay. And that's why we value play, because
right.
play gives you those opportunities to do things that you don't normally do.
Right.
They allow you to either do things differently or better, or play a different position that you wouldn't get in an organized team sport.
Right. Because
you have one goalie on a soccer team.
Right.
Two. But when you're playing just pickup games, hey, let me try to be a goalie.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, mentioning the thing about, you know, as we're talking about baseball, you know, batting opposite-handed.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
You would never do
that,
in a game.
Can't do that in a game.
But in a unstructured play setting,
mm-hmm.
you get to bat, you know, left-handed or right-handed,
right.
and
That's
you try
true.
It, and
mm-hmm.
you think, hey, that wasn't so bad.
Yeah,
and so then you do it a little bit more often, and then you start doing it in practice, more structured
right.
practices, and then you bring it into the game setting.
Right.
But it's a progression.
That's right.
And that progression builds your optimism,
mm-hmm.
builds your confidence,
right.
builds your feeling that, you know what, I can succeed at this. I can do this.
And it's about achievement. It's
right.
about doing new things, doing things better. But it's all about achievement, this,
right.
this whole optimism. So that, and that's what we want to remember. It brings to mind, in psychology, we have this thing called self-actualization.
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, kids, especially teenagers, why am I here?
Yeah.
I don't know why you're here. I don't know why anybody's here.
Right.
We're here. But I think Rogers was right.
Can I say something about that real quick?
Just,
I want you to talk about Rogers, but I just feel like I should say it. Everybody has those thoughts sometimes.
That's right.
You know, I think I say that to patients, and I think that sometimes they're like, okay, that's just his job to say that.
Mm-hmm.
The other morning, I woke up. I think it was maybe Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. I got up and I was getting ready to come into the office at like, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning or right. so.
It was a little late.
I know, I was a little late. Slept that morning. In. But I got up and I was thinking, and the first thought in my mind was, why do I keep doing this?
That's right. But that's normal.
That's normal. Because as soon as I got up and got moving, I was thinking, oh, this is why I do it. Because this is what I want to do.
We come in here Friday mornings, mm-hmm. early.
Mm-hmm.
Early yeah. on Friday mornings. And sometimes we come in here and...
We're dragging a little bit.
It's the end of the week for us too, and we're dragging. And we think, oh man. But once we start talking on these podcasts,
yeah.
all of a sudden the energy starts to flow.
Right.
But if we stayed home and stayed in bed,
right.
or just sat... we'd continue that
yeah.
same negative, pessimistic thinking.
Absolutely.
Get up, get going, start yeah. doing something. You'll start to feel better.
Right. Because as soon as you latch on to that depressive, mm-hmm. down feeling, mm-hmm. you're stuck. You're there.
You're going to ride. That's it. You're going to ride one horse or the other.
Right.
Okay. And you want to stay on this optimism horse as
right.
much as you can.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of horses, your Rogers story.
Oh, well, it goes, why am I here?
Yeah.
You know, teenagers will ask or adults will ask. You are here for one reason, to become better.
Right.
That's it. I mean, I can't find anything, leaving out all the religious reasons why we're here.
Right.
And I acknowledge all that. I'm just saying that as humans running around on the planet, what Carl Rogers said was, it is a search, it's a journey
mm-hmm.
to become better. You're here to improve in every way,
right.
to improve as a parent, as a spouse, as a teacher, as a worker, as a son, as a brother. Every day you have this obligation. And it brings to mind my Jewish friends, and we're going to talk about this some Friday. They have this concept of Shabbos, you know,
right.
where you take a look at each week of your life. You go back, and on Friday you look back at your week and say, okay, what did I do well? What did I do poorly? Because the goal is, I mean, it's no accident that a lot of the early psychologists were Jewish, you know,
right.
because part of their tradition is to analyze your life as you get better and better, because the goal is you have to reach higher and higher and higher levels,
right.
regardless of where it is.
Right.
And if you're doing that, there are more occasions for optimism.
Right.
You know, whereas if you stop getting there, stop improving, you have more occasions for pessimism.
Right.
Because you're not achieving.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So, I think that we're kind of dancing in different ways and to maybe different music. But the bottom, I think I say bottom line a lot.
You do.
I need to fix that.
No.
The bottom line is that there's multiple factors that go into how optimistic or pessimistic you are. Part of it is, like we were talking about earlier, with your temperament. And part of it is your experience.
Right.
And part of it is a decision.
I'm glad you're going there.
Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. so we can't do anything about our temperament. That's what, you're born with it, you got it, you know.
So you
hopefully,
are.
You know, as parents, we can do some work to kind of soften it a little bit and make the most of it.
Mm-hmm.
Experience, you know, sometimes we experience things that we don't want to experience and we can't really do a whole lot about that.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. If you're a kid and you, you know, all that sports stuff we were talking about a moment ago, well, if you don't have a parent who's plays sports and
yeah.
spends that time with you, and you know, all you have is a coach that does everything structured and organized, then you may not have those experiences and it may not be your fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you just may not have that opportunity.
Right.
But then you do have a choice. You do have some decision making
mm-hmm.
that you can use to overcome some of those limitations.
Right.
You know, we were talking about Martin Seligman earlier and learned helplessness. You know, a lot of that research came from animal research.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where he was looking at, and this was research done, you know, decades ago, at looking at why animals sometimes in really negative situations just sort of give up.
Give in.
Mm-hmm. They would do these experiments where, you know, the rat would, there would be a slight electrical shock on the floor mm-hmm. of his cage. And under these particular conditions, what they found is that once the rat is first placed in the cage, he will do everything he can to try to get away from the shock. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a serious shock. It was just a discomfort. And he would do everything he could to get away. But after a while, once he learned that he couldn't get away, he just kind of accepted it.
Right.
And he just stood there and didn't even try to do anything to get away from it. And that's what we see in kids sometimes, right. In adults.
There's another experiment I just love. Imagine an aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
And you slide a piece of glass in the middle of the aquarium. So mm-hmm. you divide it into two.
Right.
The fish swim and they bounce into the glass.
Right.
They're trying to swim to the other side, hit the glass. Okay. After a couple things that happen like that, they remove that pane of glass and the fish don't try to cross the middle of the aquarium. They've learned mm-hmm. that they can't.
Right.
And so they don't try.
Right.
And this is what we want to avoid with children.
Right.
We want them to keep trying.
Right.
Okay. Don't stop. So we want to create circumstances for our children that that don't set up those kind of things.
Right.
So that they keep trying.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we did a...
hard to teach learned helplessness.
Huh?
It's not hard to teach learned helplessness.
Oh, no.
I mean, it happens pretty fast.
Especially with
the fish or with the rats. Those didn't take years to do.
Right.
Those took just a couple of days and a couple of weeks.
Right. Right. Mm. No, absolutely. And kids learn it extremely fast.
They learn it very quickly.
Especially in school.
Fast. Right.
Especially mm-hmm. in school.
That's
you
right.
know, you take a kid in a class, even a teenager, mm-hmm. and you put them in, say, a biology class.
Right.
They failed the first test. It's not looking good. My daughter, I was talking about her. She was she's taking college algebra as a senior in high school.
Right.
She's taking college algebra. She failed the first test mm-hmm. because, well, we won't talk about why she failed. Partially her fault, partially the instructor's fault, and admittedly so. And I'm stuck on that now. I'm thinking about how he said, oh, yeah, it's the right answer. But that's the right answer if you follow what the book says. But I want you to do it my way. Okay, great job. Anyways, what was I talking about? But
how easy it is to learn to be helpless.
Right, she did poorly on that first test.
Right,
she hated that class from then on, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And her work effort in that class was not optimal.
One trial learning. That's right, and that's what we have to guard against.
Right, we have to be very careful of that.
Because it's very easy when you have these kids. You know, we have a lot of kids who don't want to go to school.
Right.
You know, they're afraid or they're anxious or whatever. It doesn't take many messages from parents to say, well, maybe you can't handle it.
Right.
Sure enough, they can't.
Right.
So we need to be careful about the messages that we send.
Right, and that comes down to our expectations. You know, if our sole focus is on outcome,
right?
What is an A is the only acceptable thing,
right?
B, we'll take it, but not happy about it.
Right.
C and below, that's nothing.
C is an F,
right?
C is the new F,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Then again, we're creating a situation right. where, you know, our kids, you know, the expectation is up here, and mm-hmm. as soon as they see that that's too high for them to jump,
right.
They're not going to jump.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to try.
Right. And if it's too low, they're going to hit that mark.
Right.
That's right. It's
right.
your expectation.
Right. And it that goes to another, I think it was an article that we wrote, or a blog post that we wrote, about like the Bannister effect.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Where we were talking about right. if you believe that there is this glass ceiling...
Right. Mm-hmm.
then you're not going to go beyond their glass ceiling.
If that's the limit, you know.
Right.
With breaking the sound barrier, we were talking about Chuck Yeager the other day.
Yeah.
And breaking the sound barrier. Well, if you didn't think it was possible, then why make the effort?
Right.
You know, so you don't do the research and you don't do the tests to see if you can because you assume that it can't be done.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Again, this is so related to optimism and pessimism. It gets me really excited to talk about some of these things sometimes because what we're really talking about is, you know, when you're optimistic, Mm-hmm. We think, oh, you know, it's good to be optimistic because you're, you know, forward thinking and you're, right. you tend to be happier. You tend to be more excited about things. You look forward to things. But optimism is what created the United States the way that it is today. You know, if you're not optimistic about things, you don't push boundaries.
Right. That's right.
If you know, thinking about I listen to a lot of podcasts. I was listening to a podcast not long ago, and they were talking about how, you know, it was not so many years ago, in the grand scheme of things, it was not so many years ago that it was a fact that the world was flat. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There was no question.
No reason to try. Right.
Somebody had to be optimistic. I mean, imagine being that person. Mm-hmm. Imagine saying, I'm optimistic enough that if I keep going, I'm going to be okay.
I'm not going to fall off the edge.
I'm not going to. I mean, there was art that depicted, you're going to fall off the edge.
Right. Oh, yeah. Here's what's awaiting you.
Yeah.
Right. This, personal note. There was a time in my life when I think I was between careers. I was trying to decide mm-hmm. what I wanted to do. And it was kind of a pessimistic time because yeah. I couldn't decide and I didn't like what I was doing. And so I spent a lot of time kind of ruminating and pessimism. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. I'm not. And I would watch late night TV, like Johnny Carson or David Letterman or whoever yeah. happened to be on. And they would interview these guests.
Right.
And all the guests were in a good mood. They were, yeah. they were so. And I thought, well, maybe you have to be optimistic in order to succeed.
Right.
Okay. And then it got to thinking that they're on the show because they have succeeded.
Right.
They either have a movie or a book or they're right. doing something to be. So I'm thinking, no. First, you have to achieve,
mm-hmm.
and then you're optimistic.
Right.
You know? So it is a chicken or egg thing.
Right.
Do you achieve because you're optimistic, or optimistic because you achieve? As I age, gradually, slowly, very slowly, I'm beginning to think that you're going to have optimism, pessimism, ups and downs.
Right.
But you have to work. You have to work at being optimistic. You have
right.
to have this conscious effort to be optimistic. You're not going to put yourself in. Here's why. You're not going to put yourself into a good mood. What you're going to do is you're going to manage your life so that you get some successes, which will make you more optimistic.
Right.
I think that's the mistake people make. Say, I want to be in a good mood. That's not how it works.
Right.
You can't wake up someday and just lie in your bed and do yoga to make yourself feel better. What you have to do is get up and get going and exercise and do yoga because that will make you feel better.
Right.
Okay. But you have to do something.
Right.
You can't just think yourself into optimism.
Right.
And that's what William Glasser talks about.
Right.
You know, that, and you sort of started moving in that direction, that we can't control the good or bad. We can't control the events in our life.
Right.
We can control how we react to them.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. And when you're optimistic, when you say, you know what, I can do this.
That's right.
Then you tend to, again, you tend to push the boundaries a little bit. You tend mm-hmm. to explore things that you may right. not have explored before. And that's where we get innovation. That's when we get new ideas. That's right. when we have all these tremendous discoveries mm-hmm. because somebody somewhere thought, if I just try this, mm-hmm. I can succeed.
Right.
That's right. And what it is, and it kind of goes back to my little tagline that I say at the end, is you're not afraid to fail.
Right. That's right. That's
what optimism can do for you.
I think that's number one. You cannot be afraid to fail.
My wife says sometimes that it frustrates her that I think there are times when I'm a little too optimistic.
Have you ever read the story of Pollyanna?
Yeah.
Continue.
No, I didn't read the story. I've heard of it.
Okay.
Oh, no, that was Pippi Longstocking. I don't know. No, I know who you're talking about. but I tend to be optimistic, and it makes my wife crazy sometimes because I will go into doing something saying, I'm going to finish it. I'm going to do, right. you know, this is what I'm going to do. The Udemy course.
Yes.
You know, it's a big undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk about the Udemy course in a few minutes, but it's a big undertaking. But there is no doubt in my mind
right.
that it's going to get done.
That you'll do it. Right.
So you know, whether it gets done today or it gets done in a couple of weeks, it's going to get done.
Right.
And that, to me, that optimism, you know, lets me take on things that I would not have otherwise taken on. Because if I would have sat there and said, you know, this is going to take hours of work, you know, there's just no way that I can dedicate that much time to it.
I've never done it before.
Right. You know. Yeah. And then you don't do it.
Right.
You know? So I, with my patients and stuff, I, especially teenagers, I say, you know, do stuff.
Do something. Do. The operative word is do.
Right. Do something. Mm-hmm. You know, if you love drawing.
Right.
You know, do it.
Then draw.
And if you want to turn that into something, mm-hmm. you know, get your iPhone, you know, set it up so that you can record yourself, time lapse or whatever, right. record yourself while you're drawing, mm-hmm. put it up on YouTube, let right. other people see it, you know, then all of a sudden you have people saying, well, how did you do this? Or how did you do that? And now right. you're creating a discussion about this thing that you're passionate about, something right. that you love doing. And now you have, some optimism. Now you're feeling right. good because You're producing something.
You have done something.
Right.
You know, whether it's sports or art or music or it doesn't matter what it is. Just do, you know, say what you want about Nike. Just do it.
Right.
Just do this and you'll start to feel better about it. So one operative word is do.
Right.
You have to do. You have to achieve.
Okay? Right.
And the other is you have to make a decision about how you're going to respond.
Right.
You know, that's under your control.
Right.
That is.
Yeah. Because as my wife would say, because there's times when when it doesn't happen,
right.
when I don't succeed,
right?
Okay, and she's her thing is that she hates seeing me disappointed and all mm-hmm. that kind of stuff, which is sweet, but that doesn't change the next time that something comes around. I'm gonna be like, oh no, this is gonna work. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is gonna work,
right.
and this is how I'm gonna make it work.
Right.
And this is what I learned from that failure. Mm-hmm. That's gonna make sure that this next time succeeds.
That's right. And it makes me think of. Edison, wasn't Edison yeah. who said, you know, well, you've tried all this stuff and said, yeah, but I know what doesn't work.
Right.
So I'll just keep moving forward
because exactly.
now I know what not to do.
Right.
That's success.
Right.
Knowing what not to do
yeah.
is success.
Right.
You know, you haven't failed. You've notched another success. I know what not to do.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We see this in research studies
sure.
and unfortunately, so many research studies that were disproven where mm-hmm. the hypothesis wasn't supported by the data,
right.
end up not being published.
Right.
It's like, no, wait, that's just as important
that's right.
as if it was supported.
Right.
You know, yeah. because wouldn't it be nice to know how many times Prozac wasn't effective in curing
right.
or dealing with depression?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that be nice? Because then we wouldn't have all these studies that just say, oh yeah, it's great.
Right.
And then we're thinking, why doesn't it work with my patients?
It's like we see artists or musicians and you see this new band come along and you say, even the Beatles, you know, say, wow, you know. But we didn't see all that they did to get to the Ed Sullivan Show.
Right.
We didn't see all they did to get to Yankee Stadium. We
right.
didn't see those early years of disappointment and failure and
right.
practice alone. To get where they are today. This didn't start today. This started years and years ago.
Right.
With many failures along the way. But
right.
you keep going.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you get booed off stage.
Yeah.
You have a choice to
make.
Get
beer bottles thrown at you. And,
right.
you know, you have to work behind a chicken wire because people
right.
are throwing food and bottles.
And that's where it comes down to, you can't control your temperament. You can't control people throwing things at you and that
that's
kind
right.
of thing. But you can control what you do next. You can
That's
control
right.
that decision
mm-hmm.
to say, you know what, that kind of bar wasn't where I need to go. I need to go to a different one.
That's right.
Now you've learned something.
That's right.
And so now you're going to increase the likelihood
mm-hmm.
of success next time.
That's right.
And that, I think, is a value and a world perspective that we really have to
mm-hmm.
directly, overtly,
right.
concretely teach to our kids.
That's right.
Because our kids don't do that intuitively.
We should be teaching that to children because children should, and I say should, I don't say they might, they should experience failure and disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
They should not, we should not engineer success.
Right.
We should engineer success and failure
mm-hmm.
because if they're not falling short, then the bar is not set high enough.
Right.
If a kid gets all A's, that's good, but there's something missing.
Right.
That child needs more.
Right.
Doesn't have to be more schooling, but it could be additional activities.
Right.
When I see kids who get straight A's, I think, okay, you really ought to be doing something else now because you can handle the schoolwork.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't have to go on to college or something. Enjoy that and learn how to play a musical instrument, or enjoy that and start playing sports.
Right.
You know, you're good at this.
Right.
So that gives you time to do other things.
Right.
You know, doesn't have to be school.
Right.
Do other things.
And it works just the same for adults.
And for adults.
If you find yourself in a situation where you're down a lot, okay, right. Let's figure out why you're down a lot. Maybe it's because you're not doing something that you're passionate about. Maybe it's right. because you're not doing something that you really enjoy. Maybe it's because you feel as though you're stuck or whatever. Okay, let's push those boundaries a little
bit. Right.
You know, overcome the fear and anxiety that of failure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's work to overcome that so that then you can move to that next level where you say, okay, I'm going to try something I've never tried before.
Right.
I'm going to be very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
Optimism sometimes requires you to be vulnerable.
Right.
It may make you vulnerable. It may make you feel a little uncomfortable, a little uneasy.
Right.
You know, I remember as an adult, I started taking Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm.
Always wanted to learn Kung Fu. And so I started taking Kung Fu classes. And, you know, I'm nothing bad about anybody who does anything. But wearing those Kung Fu outfit, it's a little bit like, you know, I certainly don't want to stop at the store on the way back wearing my gi. Because it's just, you feel odd because it's like, it's just outside of your comfort zone a little bit, you know. I typically dress a particular way when I go different places and do different things. And to be dressed like that out in public is outside my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to allow myself to be a little bit uncomfortable
mm-hmm.
in order to explore and see if this is something I can be successful with.
How'd you do?
I stuck with it for about 2.5 years. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So you did it.
So I did it. I overcame it.
Right.
Again, I'm an optimistic guy.
You just got a 7-Eleven in your gi.
I just didn't go to 7-Eleven.
Okay.
I did all of that before.
Stayed in the car. Ran it.
That's right.
You got a trench coat.
So, but no, you find ways to overcome. You find those things that make you uncomfortable.
Right.
And if it's something that you really want to do, then you push through it and you make it happen anyways.
Right.
Again, our kids don't do that naturally. We have to teach
right.
them
That's
that.
Right.
But we teach them by doing it ourselves.
That's right. You lead by example.
Right.
You have to model it for your children. If you're modeling pessimism, guess what your kids are going to absorb?
Right.
Pessimism.
Yeah, I know that my kids are because again, these are the trials and tribulations of being so too optimistic sometimes. if I start getting sick, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sick.
Right.
My optimism tells me that
I don't get sick.
Right. I'm gonna get through it, mm-hmm. and I tend to get over illnesses much faster because I think that positivity
because you don't give in to it.
Right.
That's right.
And so when my kids start getting sick, I don't know that I've ever said, my kid's sick. I said, you know, he's not feeling well. He's got a stuffy nose.
Right.
You know, I'll talk symptom-wise, but I think it makes him crazy. No, I am sick, Dad.
Yep.
And I was like, no. Will yourself out of it. And my kids just look at me like, what are you talking about, you lunatic?
Oh, my God.
But that's just the way that I think about things. And it certainly results in problems sometimes because, it makes my family crazy when I do that. But that's how I see the world.
Right.
And I can't help it. I don't know if my parents taught that to me.
No, it's a combination of you have had success.
Mm-hmm.
In the things that you've done, okay? But you've also chosen the activities that make you successful.
Right.
Okay? And I think that's what you have to do is you can't keep banging your head against failure. You know,
right.
Go out and find what you do well.
Right.
You know, that's the obligation.
Right. And the amazing thing is that you have to try different things because you never
that's
know
right.
what you're
you
going
don't
to be
know
successful
what you're good at.
At.
Exactly.
You know, even
exactly.
if you're 50 years old,
mm-hmm.
there's something out there that you
right.
have never tried before
right.
that you could be amazing at.
Right. One of the things I'll
go
credit,
try.
One of the things I'll
go rock climbing.
My, yeah. I don't care what it is.
Jump
on airplanes.
We never tried rock climbing before, right? We had, you know, we live in Florida. Where do you climb rocks in Florida? Mm-hmm. Not many places. No. So my wife and I, we, you know, this was years ago. We found some rock climbing place over in Orlando. Mm-hmm. And so we went over there. We were both like, yeah, this is going to be fun. Let's just try it. My wife is amazing at rock climbing. Mm-hmm. She was like, she was killing me at it. Right. I'm like trying, you know, my fingertips. I'm like, I'm a soccer player. I'm not using my hands. What's happening?
I wear gloves.
Right? What's this? But she was amazing. And she's like getting to the tops of these, you know, 20 foot tall mm-hmm. on our first time. And I'm thinking, who would have ever known?
How would you have known?
How would you That's have right. ever known? And she developed a love for it. Mm-hmm. And we're not able to do it as much anymore, but she had this love for it because she was just so good at it.
Well, I think of, you know, we live in Florida. We don't have a lot of rocks to climb. But when I think of the water here, I think you can go fishing.
Right.
Scuba diving, snorkeling, crabbing, netting, shrimping. I mean, you have to try all these things yeah. to see what suits you. You
right.
know, just in that little, what do you do with the water in Florida? There's a hundred ways to approach the water here.
Right.
You got to try them all, see what you're good at.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, just, and when you find something,
exercise.
It's amazing how contagious it is.
Right.
Because when you find something that you've never done before, mm-hmm. that you're good at, and that you are energized to do, that optimism bleeds into everything else.
Right.
You know what? How many times do people start on Mondays and think, I'm never going to mm-hmm. get through this week?
Right.
But if they have a vacation scheduled the next weekend,
the next day,
all they think of right. is, I can get through this week. Or the words are, instead of saying, I'm never going to get through this week, to, I can't wait to get through this week.
Right.
You know,
right.
when our vocabulary changes, mm-hmm. the power that vocabulary has over our feelings and our thoughts and our motivations
right.
is amazing.
And so, that's those two words again, do.
Right.
Go out and do. And the other one is, you have to think about things differently. You have to talk to yourself differently.
Right.
So when you do encounter the rough patches, you're going to encounter the rough patches.
Yeah.
Then you have to say, okay, what's the problem? What do I do? How do I adjust? What do I do about this?
Right.
Your obligation is not serial success.
Right.
Your obligation is, what do I do next?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. You know, all of us.
To me, failure is really not much different than success.
No.
I mean,
no.
It really isn't. I mean,
there are times when we all come into the office
right.
thinking about our little microcosm here mm-hmm. at PAC Florida. There are times when each of us will come into the mm-hmm. office and we will feel down.
Right.
You can notice it with me,
yes.
right? When I feel down, I'll close my door.
Right. Well, you don't talk.
We don't talk.
Right. When you're down, you don't come into my office in the morning. You go get your coffee and you go into your office. And
yeah.
I say, okay.
Yeah. yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
we all do that.
And we just get through it.
Right.
Because we know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little flip.
Right.
And things, there we go.
And
things
are
better again.
And you know exactly what I'm talking about here. In the business that we're in, whether it's psychology, medicine, social work,
mm-hmm.
doesn't matter, teaching, you know that you never bat 1,000.
Right.
We all know that we don't succeed with everybody we see.
Right.
Okay. It might be 80% success or 70 or 90, but none of us succeed with everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. But I learn. Probably, I may learn more when I fall short,
mm-hmm.
when I fail, because then I know what not to do the next time.
Right.
What mistake did you make? What error did you make? What was it about this?
Right.
And I think I probably learn more from when I fail
yeah.
than when I succeed.
Yeah. And you,
because when
just...
I succeed, I don't know whether it's something I did or something they did.
Right.
You know, it may
right.
be I said something and that's triggered a thought. And they ran with the thought, not with what I said, not
right.
with my advice, but with their own thinking. I don't know why they're successful.
Right.
Okay. But I know why I fall short.
Right.
Yeah.
And you mentioned batting 1,000. And so I'm going to ask you, I think you know this statistic. This is why I'll ask you cold. Batting average in baseball,
mm-hmm.
right? What's a really good batting average?
If you get a hit once every three times,
right.
you're a superstar.
Superstar.
Absolutely.
You will be in the majors if you bat 300.
That's right.
333.
Right.
Okay.
If you can get a hit at least once every three or four times you're up.
Right.
you're going to be a highly paid superstar.
Okay. So that's 33% of the time to be successful.
Success rate. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that if we translate that to the rest of our lives,
okay.
You know, we're going to fail 66% of the time.
That's right. A baseball player fails 66 to 75% of the time.
And they still get paid millions of dollars.
And they get paid millions.
And we still sit and watch that boring that game that seems to last forever. It lasts so long.
And it's so slow.
It's so slow.
And they do timeouts.
How do they do timeouts? Anyways, so you know, this idea that we have to be successful every time doesn't translate to anything else in the world.
I hate the idea of getting all A's. I hate the idea of he has to succeed every time, otherwise his self-esteem will be damaged. No, it won't be damaged.
It'll be fine.
It's an opportunity to get to the next level.
Yeah. So
now, whether it's baseball, but there is a sport. Ted Williams used to say that success is 1 out of 3. But there are some sports where you need a much higher level. But
still, sure.
But still, the best tennis players in the world occasionally double fault.
Right.
Or occasionally miss a shot or occasionally lose a match.
Right.
I mean, every great tennis player in the world has lost matches.
Right.
Okay. But they somehow overcome that and keep doing it.
Right. Right. You have to keep going.
There was a tennis tournament here in Florida. There's a tennis tournament here in Miami every year. It used to be the Sony Ericsson. They changed the name Miami Open or something now. One of the years that we were there, Roger Federer lost. I think it was Federer lost in the initial round, mm-hmm. very early. The next day, he was on a practice court getting ready for the next tournament.
Right.
Okay. That's the difference.
He
was out there, and I thought, what in the world is he doing? He was on his way to the next tournament in a week or so, so he was getting ready for that.
Which he probably went and won.
And he may have won, you know, but and that's what you do. That's
right.
What you keep going forward.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So work, make a decision.
Right.
Promote the idea of optimism.
Right.
And we did that with this podcast, right? Because how did we start out this podcast? We started out this podcast saying, where you said, what are we going to talk about today? I said, I'm not going to tell you what we're going to talk about today. Right?
You did.
Because this is something that's such at the core of what we have to do with people. I was optimistic that this was something that we'd be able to talk to help people about, because I knew that this is something that's at the crux of so many
really
challenges
is.
That people
it really
that people yeah. struggle with.
Yeah, I think keeping a positive outlook,
right.
No matter what, either by doing more or interpreting things in a positive way to
right.
say, okay, I'm disappointed. But this is what I can do about
right,
it.
Right.
It really is at the core of everything we do.
Yeah.
Whether we're dealing with children or adults or teenagers or adults. Teenagers struggle with this.
Right.
They really do.
They do.
Because
they're in that transition.
Yeah,
that
it's
transition
really hard
is tough.
Because they're and they feel like they're under these lights, these bright lights that everybody's watching.
Right.
I know nobody's watching me.
Right.
So I can fail in private and fix it. They think that everything is very public, you know, the personal
right.
fable kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
So work to be optimistic. Again, there's a lot of things that we can't control, but the things that you can control is your decisions and what you do next.
And the bad times are going to
right.
evaporate. They're going to go away. The storm is going to pass, okay?
Right.
So just keep telling yourself that you're going to get through this. This is going to go away.
Yeah, yeah. So
if it doesn't, that's a different situation. But in most
right.
of us, it's going to go
away. But then you get help.
That's
yeah.
right.
All right, just a couple of things of housekeeping very quickly. The part one of the Handbook for Raising an Emotionally Healthy Child is mm-hmm. on Amazon Kindle.
Right.
You can pre-order it as of today,
right.
but it'll be downloaded and it's available for immediate download starting on Tuesday, May 10th.
Mm-hmm.
It's $4.99, but You're going to get lots of information about different developmental periods from birth through adolescence, and lots of strategies and some additional resources that you'll be able to find online that you'll have access to online that'll help you work through some of that stuff. Our elimination diet manual is also on Kindle. Lots of people are having success with that, so we encourage you. It's 99 cents. Jump on Kindle, Amazon Kindle, look for the elimination diet manual, and check that out. If you have an opportunity, write us a review or rate us on iTunes or Google Play Music. We're there too. So other people can find us and join in on the conversation and be a part of it. So, All right. That's everything. So until next week, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great week and forget to be afraid.